Happy Saturday. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. Coming up in just a bit, myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube. But first, let's recap the game from Friday night. First of three for the Reds in Chicago against the White Sox. This is a place where the Reds have not played well at all in the past. Reds just 2-8 all time in Chicago against the White Sox, and they have never won a series there. Reds started off strong in the top of the first. Will Benson got a gift double when White Sox left fielder Andrew Benintendi got a really bad jump on a ball, could not get to it, actually had a catch probability of 97%. And then Benson took off for second but tripped on his way to second base. But Benintendi just compounded his mistakes by throwing the ball offline. Benson made it into second. A wild pitch then moved Benson over to third base, and then Christian Encarnacion Strand hit a ball hard to right field for a sac fly to put the Reds quickly up 1-0. Reds really jumped on White Sox starting pitcher Chris Flexen in the third inning when Christian Encarnacion Strand started a two-out rally with a hard-hit single to left field. Spencer Steer then walked, and then with Jake Fraley at the plate, CES scored all the way from second base with some great hustle on an infield single when the ball was slightly deflected off the glove of White Sox first baseman Andrew Vaughn, putting the Reds up 2-0. And then Ellie De La Cruz really made the White Sox pay when he crushed a 449-foot three-run home run, 110.8 off the bat, 5-0 Cincinnati. Tyler Stevenson came to the plate next. Actually, in his first at-bat, he just missed a home run, hit a ball 399 feet to straightaway center field, but he did not miss it in at-bat number two. Solo home run to right field to make it 6-0. That chased Chris Flexen. First home run of the season for Tyler Stevenson. And Tyler Stevenson was actually catching Andrew Abbott just the second time Tyler Stevenson has ever caught Andrew Abbott. Abbott typically throws to Luke Maley, but it certainly didn't seem to impact Abbott on Friday night. He made the longest start by any Red this season, going 7 innings, just allowing 4 hits, 1 run, no walks, and struck out 3. Reds would play add-on in the 6th. Nick Martini tripled, and then Santiago Espinal had a sac fly. And then they got 2 more runs in the 8th when Tyler Stevenson, Jonathan India, and Spencer Steer all walked. And then a broken bat single by CES with 2 outs made it 9-1. And then a 2-out single from Santiago Espinal in the 9th made it 11-1. Reds bullpen did their job as well. Emilio Pagan pitched a perfect 8th with 2 strikeouts. Buck Farmer pitched a perfect 9th. Reds win 11-1. Reds now 7-6 on the season. Just really good nights all around from the Reds offense. Jonathan India walked 4 times, actually becoming the first Red to do that since Joey Votto in 2018. Spencer Steer did what Spencer Steer does. He was on base 3 times. And Santiago Espinal had a really nice night. 2-for-4 with 3 RBI. Espinal playing third base as David Bell gave Jamer Candelario the night off. All right, well, here was what Tyler Stevenson had to say right after the game.
Tyler, you're hitting behind Ellie tonight. Dude hits a near 450-foot home run. That is a tough act to follow. Best way to follow it, those with a home run of your own, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a really good view from this side. I think he hit it about 110 or 111.
Yeah.
He's been doing really well. It's a lot of fun to watch. Obviously, we all know that. But yeah, to follow it up with a hit like that, yeah, we'll take that every day.
I believe it was a 3-2 count, right? So you're expecting fastball there?
Yeah. I mean, you always want to stay aggressive and be on the fastball. I feel like that's kind of always the approach and stuff. And I know my first at bat, kind of similar pitch, hit it really good to center. Saw him really well. He threw me a lot of pitches in that second at bat. So I had a kind of good view of everything that he has shown and threw me a heater. Took it the other way, something that I've been trying to do, and it feels good to get back to that approach and drive it that way.
Boy, it was nice watching Andrew Abbott tonight. It was like Andrew Abbott when he first came up last year. What was working so well?
Really everything. Curveball, was able to land it early and sometimes late when we needed it. And I feel like we threw the changeup probably a little bit more today. There was something that we kind of talked about pregame, and he threw some really good ones. Got a huge double play. towards the later inning, and just being able to come in to see her. It's fun to catch him, spend some time with him in spring, like we talked earlier, and he threw great tonight.
Pretty good way to start the road trip. Pretty good bounce back after the game against Milwaukee.
Yeah, absolutely. Every day we can win a game is huge. Great way to start the series, and I think we're all excited for Houston tomorrow and get him back out in the field. So we're excited for that.
We are excited to watch Lodolo tomorrow as well.
And here's the post-game comments from Ellie De La Cruz.
Ellie, it feels like this week has been a very strong week for you. What has helped you get going offensively so well?
I got the same mentality. And I just looking for my pitch. I see the ball well.
Were you expecting it? I think you got a changeup.
Were you expecting a changeup right there?
Yeah, he told me that changeup in the first pitch. And I was looking for the changeup, but I know he had a changeup.
You also haven't struck out at all these last few games. Is that a positive thing for you, being after striking out a lot early on,
to not strike out lately?
Yeah, that's a positive thing. And I'm just looking for my pitch to hit, for a good pitch.
You've always said that running is the favorite part of your game. Is that even better than a 450-foot home run?
Yeah, still, I love running the bases.
What was your impressions of Andrew Abbott tonight?
I'm not impressed. I know he can do that. He always is like that. He's unhittable.
And here's Andrew Abbott talking about his great start on Friday night.
Imagine that one had to feel pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, defense playing great behind me, making plays. Was able to get ahead of guys, was able to get in, was able to execute off speed. Just probably the best collective effort in a game I've had this year to this point.
We have made a lot about you trying to go into righties with that fastball. It seemed like tonight, did it finally get there? You're comfortable with it?
Yeah, I was able to get in there for some call strikes and then some, easier contact and some early contact too. So, it can only help to get in there. Obviously, they put better swings on it when I did miss those spots, which just proves how important it is for me to get in there.
It's also important to be efficient to allow you to get to the seventh inning, and that just usually spells good things are going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, defense was making a lot of plays behind me. Santi with the double play ball in one inning, Fraley's catch. Countless other fly ball outs. Benson, I think, had one in center that was against the wall. So, just everyone was able to help me get to the seventh. It wasn't just me, but, the team was playing well behind me, and, you're able to ride that momentum the whole time.
And lastly, here's Reds manager David Bell.
Imagine the best thing going forward for you would be what you got from Andrew Abbott tonight.
Yeah, he was good. Really good fastball, threw a lot of fastballs, made pitches, and, had enough life on that fastball where guys took some good swings, but they just missed it. So that's who he is. He's been pitching well. So it's nice for Andrew to get some good results tonight.
Have you seen anything different from Ellie? Other than not striking out during this good run here. But.
Yeah, a lot of the hits. They had a home run the other day with two strikes. So that's a good sign, but. It's just like anyone else. You start having success and you start playing with more confidence, getting deeper in accounts, comfortable getting deeper in accounts, and confident that you can put the ball in play hard.
And that play he made in the field, that's the one thing. He's had some breakdowns in the field early on, but the big week that he's had, does that contribute to when a play like that comes his way in the ninth tonight, in a 10-run game, that he's able to make that?
Yeah, of course, the idea is, especially when, we plan to play important games, you have to play nine innings of offense and defense and be able to separate it. We're happy with what Ellie's doing offensively and defensively. We know he's going to get better. And for us, it's just making sure he's doing the things he needs to do, and he is. So, we're really... really happy with where he is and how he's handling everything. But the more plays he gets, the more at-bats he gets, the better he's going to get. That's the way it's going to work for Ellie.
All right, well, our deep drive of the game was, of course, Ellie De La Cruz's 3-run home run that put the Reds up 5-0. It had an exit velocity of 110.8, went 449 feet. And our deep drive of the day, sponsored as always by Deep South Commodities, DSC is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production, specializing in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks, as always, to our friends at DSC. All right, checking out scores around the NL Central. Pirates beat the Phillies 5-2. The Brewers crushed the Orioles 11-1. Seattle beat the Cubs 4-2. And the Cardinals beat the Diamondbacks 9-6. So the red-hot NL Central, the standings sit as follows on Saturday morning. Pirates 9-3. Brewers 10-4. Reds and Cubs both 7-6. And the Cardinals are 7-7. All right. Well, here's myself and Trace Fowler on Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube. Stick around at the end. I'll tell you about all the Reds minor league action and preview Saturday's game against the White Sox.
You know what that means, everybody. That was the sound of a well-cracked Pilsner on a very, very well-deserved and earned win. The Reds needed a win, needs a strong word on April 12th. I get it. I don't want to over-exaggerate, but let's face it, Nick, they were playing a team that we, for all intents and purposes, should have beaten. They're going up against somebody that, quite frankly, they should have beaten. And they did just that, Nick. Overall, just how you feeling?
These games always make me the most nervous. The games you're supposed to win. Because you know the White Sox, they're going to win 50 or 60 games this year. I remember in 2022 how bad that Reds team is, which is just like this White Sox team right now. And Reds went into Yankee Stadium and won 2 of 3. Like, it happens. So it's nice when you're able to just to take care of business. And I mean, really take care of business like they did tonight.
Yeah, they went 11-1. Run rule. That's basically what it looks like. It looks like a run rule over the Chicago White Sox. And they did it in a plethora of ways offensively. And you know what? I'm happy for Ellie. Glad to see that he is, what's the right word? He's playing to the level in which Facebook Fred expects.
Glad that he can appease Facebook Fred, who spent a unnecessary amount of time worrying about Ellie De La Cruz. Look, Ellie's going to have ups and downs, but this is what he's capable of, what he's done over the last week. Yeah, I mean, look, he's going to face some tougher pitchers. Obviously, tonight you're facing the White Sox. You're facing a journeyman pitcher that probably doesn't make a whole lot of major league rosters right now.
Right.
But, hey, look, these all count. He's continuing to get better. He made a nice play in the ninth inning defensively. Looks like he's getting more confident just overall. And just got to take a step back and take a breath. Let this guy develop, because he's still developing. He's still incredibly young. If you had asked people 2 years ago, you would have thought he'd just be getting to the big leagues now. So he was ahead of schedule when he got here. And it's nice to see him playing well, because if the Reds want any sort of chance of making the playoffs and maybe even doing some damage, it has to be with the help of Ellie De La Cruz.
I agree. And you know what it's adorable about Ellie De La Cruz that I love more than anything is when he does his interviews in English. I genuinely like that. Just, I don't know what it is about that, but it just makes my heart happy to hear him doing his interviews in English. One in which you can always catch on the podcast version of this very same show in the mornings, more times than not. All right. Tyler Stevenson, he hit an Oppo Taco home run. Kudos to him. He's got a little bit of pop the opposite way. I don't know what it is about him and his inability to lift the baseball on a poolside pitch, but he just doesn't do it all that often. But if you leave a pitch middle away and it's relatively straight, he does some damage to it. So I'm kudos to Tyler Stevenson. Now, it did kind of take away, in my opinion, Ellie's home run after he hit his, but I was just like, all right, well, this guy's officially put his application in for working at Kroger after that ball left the yard. I don't want to slander Tyler Stevenson. I like Tyler. He's a good guy. It's got to be a bad look for you if you're giving up Oppo Tacos to Ty.
Wow. Sheesh. In fairness to Tyler Stevenson, he also, I think the other ball that he hit was actually further. The one that...
It was. 390-something plus feet. What do you have in front of you?
399, yeah.
Yeah.
He's pulling the bat very well today. Caught Andrew Abbott. I saw we had a super chat right off the rip asking about if this was the first time Stevenson had caught Andrew Abbott. He caught him once at the end of last year, kind of when Abbott was out of gas. But yeah, look, nice to see him catching Andrew Abbott. And you know, not maybe a little bit more of that personal catcher, like you have to catch this guy, you have to catch this guy. Obviously, Andrew Abbott seemed like he was pretty comfortable with Tyler Stevenson tonight.
Right.
Again, you don't want to make too much of a big deal of a game against the White Sox, but hey, what else are you supposed to do, right? Other than win the game 11-1.
Andrew Abbott, what else is there to say? It's one of those weird situations where I don't want to take away anything that any of these guys did tonight just because it was the White Sox. Like, but part of me wants to do that. You know? Like, I'm fighting that battle right now. Andrew Abbott threw the ball really, really well. He threw the ball over the plate, got outs. You know, I get the lineup wasn't all that great, but at the end of at the end of it all, hey, I'll take that from Andrew Abbott. And it sounds as if, not to jump too far ahead, but it sounds as if he's, you know, solidified himself, at least for the time being, in the rotation. We had talked about at the beginning of this whole situation with Nick Martinez, was he going to stick or not? He was the odd man out, if we're being honest. He was on the cut line, per se, pun intended with the Masters. But, you know, kudos to him. At least hopefully he gets some comfortability now. He feels a little more settled in as a big league starter.
Yeah, I mean, you love that he didn't walk anyway. This is a team, your number one rule going into a game is do not beat yourself, right? I mean, you want to throw strikes against this team. If you're a left-handed pitcher, I talked on the podcast this morning with Elijah Evans, who covers the White Sox, and he said, if you're a left-handed pitcher, this is a dream lineup for you. And it's true. And I guess we'll see how Dick Lodola does tomorrow, and that might make us feel either better or the same about Andrew Abbott's start today. But look, he took care of business. Nice to see him go seven innings. Nice to see him save the bullpen. All those kind of things are important over the course of a 162-game season. And yeah, I mean, look, there was a lot of questions about him, and I'll be the first to raise my hand. I thought that he was probably the guy that I would have asked if Brandon Williamson would have been healthy, but Brandon Williamson's not healthy, and Andrew Abbott has just proven that he belongs right now, and you hope that he can continue to keep it up because he's thrown the ball really well this year. Looks exactly like he looked at the beginning of last year, so you're kind of starting to think, all right, well, was the end of last year just straight running out of gas? Was that it? And it's trending that way.
Yeah, that was the fight that we were all fighting in regards to what we wanted to make out of Andrew Abbott. Was it a fluke that he threw the ball really that well over the course of a month and a half when he first came up? Was it a situation where maybe the league didn't really adjust to him? We always talk about hitters adjusting to the league, right? Or pitchers adjusting to hitters in the league, but we rarely talk about maybe hitters starting to get some intel on pitchers. And I was wondering if maybe that was part of the case as to why he fell or kind of floundered down the stretch. Many people, rightfully so, pointed towards exhaustion, and it was the most innings he's ever thrown in his career, and that probably, more than likely, was the reason. Or sometimes maybe you just, like Nick, he came down to earth a little bit too. Maybe it was a combination of all three of those things. Like, let's face it, he wasn't going to be a 1 point, whatever he was, a 1.4 ERA pitcher for the rest of his career. So there was at some point, the old cliche always works itself out. Water will find its level. Anything left to add on Abbott before we kind of move forward into this show that is a winning one, 11-1?
Not really. I mean, just a nice performance. Just good to see him taking care of business. Be interested to see kind of how he looks his next time out. The LA Angels. So another pretty good, probably a pretty good matchup. The Angels, a little bit better offense than the White Sox for sure. Obviously, if you have Mike Trout in your lineup, you're probably better than whatever the White Sox are running out there. But yeah, great start to the season for Andrew Abbott. Really excited about the way he's got off to start the season.
Sean asks here real quick, when you have as many young arms as the Reds, why wouldn't a six-man rotation be preferred? Sean, my preferred answer to that is that you're dealing, you know, the whole cliche or the rationale behind, you don't want to move, like if you have an injury in the field, you don't move guys three and four positions to try to fill that one hole. I don't want to affect five guys just to try to appease one. That's my thought. Like, and maybe most of these guys would prefer a six-man rotation. I have a hard time believing so. They're creatures of habit. They want to have it the way in which they probably had it most of their career and or the way in which it's been their entire minor league career, and that's five-man rotation. That's just the standard. Maybe, again, hand up, there's no guarantee that it wouldn't be useful or wouldn't help. But, Nick, I prefer more importantly than the 5 or 6 man rotation, I said this 1,000 times on the show, and it's kind of turning out to be I was right, not to try to brag, but I just want to have Nick Martinez in the bullpen because I like the idea of him being there. Like, that's helping solidify a pretty solid bullpen. Guys you can rely upon to go to in a tight game. Adding Nick Martinez into that helps us.
The only pushback I would give you on that is the thing that worries me about moving Nick Martinez to the bullpen right now, this early in the year, is if there's another injury right after that, and you kind of messed Martinez's, is you know, the way he'd gotten prepared. Because all spring he'd gotten prepared to be a starter, he had ramped up that way, and now he's going to ramp down to some degree to be a reliever. So again, I think there has to be some sort of knowing your team, and this goes to Derek Johnson probably more than anyone. He's got to know, okay, would Graham Ashcraft fit in a 6-man rotation? Would Frankie Montas, would Hunter Green fit in a 6-man rotation? Because that's as big of a key as anything else. Now, it worked wonderful for the Brewers, but had the Brewers kind of had this as a strategic thing throughout their organization where they were prepared better when they got to the big leagues for a 6-man rotation, because you don't want to mess, like you said, you don't want to mess these other guys up. But if you think that it wouldn't mess them up, I'm all for a 6-man rotation and limiting the innings early in the year when you can. But I don't want to do anything to mess up Hunter Green at the same time. So there has to be that balance, and that's where you have to really know your players.
No, and those guys, let's be honest, that's where David Bell and obviously Nick Kroll and the rest of the front office, they're going to know the players. They're going to know, I don't want to say the mindset, but they're going to know kind of the systematic way in which they've already gone about their business way more than we would ever. So I default to them. All right, game time, folks. If you want to be a big-time fan and go to a game, there's no better place, there's no better where, no better place to turn to than the Game Time app. As we've said before, you can use a code. You can get $20 off your first purchase, and you can use the code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y. That is CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y, for $20 off your first purchase. And you know what? I'm going to tell you a little secret. This is inside baseball. You guys can use the code, like, more, you know, I don't want to say more than once, but you just got to be smart about it. You know, it's like if you have a significant other, you got a dog, you got to use your brain here. You got to use your brain. Maybe you know somebody, they haven't used the code. You just got to figure it out. You know, I see many of you. I see many of you in the chat. You've come prepared in multiple facets at time from time. So just think through the ways in which you could possibly use the Game Time app and use the code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y, and help us out. And we would very much appreciate it. Tickets the other day, I know the game got rained out, and rightfully so. That's probably why nobody wanted to go. But I think you could get on the Game Time app, and I'm not even joking. The tickets were $4. All right, moving on.
Trace, you probably could get on the Game Time app and find a ticket for tomorrow or Sunday if you're able to make a trip up to Chicago
right, for
a really good bargain using the Game Time app.
Yes, if you find a hotel, my best guess is if you could find a hotel in the Windy City for, call it, $125, my best guess after tickets all in price, you're looking at about $130, my guess. It all comes down to what you can find on the hotel value. Or just sleep in your vehicle. Just make sure you don't do it on the south side. All right, moving on here. CES and the offense. Good for CES, by the way. He didn't really maybe deserve the last one, but he did deserve it. You know what I'm saying? Like, he hits the ball. He's hit the ball hard the last, what, probably week, I'd say. The only pushback you could make a little bit, Nick, on all of the folks that are trying to defend him by just saying, oh, he's hitting the ball hard, he's hitting the ball hard. He's not lifting the baseball, though. Like, he needs to find a way to get the ball in the air, and that will probably make sure that some of those hard-hit balls are actually hits. But it looks like he's seeing the ball significantly better. And he's kind of looked like that over the last few games as well.
It's just nice to see him get some results tonight. The really nice piece of hitting in the first inning, getting that first run, when he did lift the ball to right field, hit the ball really hard to the right fielder. What you want to do in that spot, I'm not a big, like, oh yeah, just get the easy run, hit a cheap sack fly. Like, you want to do damage, but you also want to make sure you get the run in, and that's what he was trying to do, and you know, came through in that spot. But just up and down. I mean, Jonathan India walking 4 times. He really, there's something about him in the leadoff spot where he just embraces it and have more patient at bat, seemed to be a lot more willing to draw walks in the leadoff spot. Obviously tonight he was facing some pitchers that kind of gave it to him, but overall, I mean, he's almost like a completely different hitter in the leadoff spot, and it's cool to see. And you keep putting him there, you know, with the lineup the Reds have right now, at least until TJ Friedl comes back. Maybe even you keep him when TJ Friedl comes back, and you put Friedl ninth, maybe to start the year, and let him kind of get comfortable and ease way in, and kind of see how that works.
It's time to give out some flowers again. You ready? Gonna give them out. It's Friday night. We're feeling right, and I think it's time to give Espinal a little bit of flower love. I don't know if he hit the ball all that hard tonight, but you know what he did do? He hit him where they ain't, and which is that's the goal of the game. That's the purpose. When you go up to bat, the goal is to get on base. And you know what Espinal did tonight? And he got on base, made a nice slick fielding play in the field. He even had Chris Welsh bragging about him. He said, "If you come out to the field about 5 o'clock, you'll see Espinal playing." And that's like, yeah, that's probably because that's the only time you get to see him play most of the time, Chris, to be fair. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean, but I'm just saying, you know, if you want to see Espinal play, 5 o'clock's probably the time to come. But, you know, he was giving a nice compliment to Espinal. So shout out to him. I'm really happy for him. Again, to be very clear, I hope that I don't really see him play a lot of baseball, especially in meaningful moments. But I do want to give him his flowers. So kudos to him.
2 for 4, 3 ribbies. Nice day for Santiago Espinal. Look, he's going to play versus left-handed pitchers, so you're going to see him again in the lineup tomorrow. I think he could fit in the platoon role fine. I think he's fine.
I mean, yeah.
I think he's a solid defender. I think he had a really rough start. There's nothing worse than when a new player comes over, you look at their Statcast page, the outs above average look really good, and then they just crap the bed the first two games, and boom, they're a terrible defender in everyone's mind, and I can't do anything to change their mind until, you know, they play 5 months of elite defense.
I have nothing against him defensively. I just don't know how long that battle hold up, but we'll find out. I mean, at the end of the day, we don't have much of a choice. He's here. There's no backups. Nobody's coming to save. You know what I am thankful for? Well, I'm not really thankful for it, actually. I don't know how to explain this. I'm not happy that Arroyo got hurt, but I am happy that I don't have to hear about every other day why Arroyo is not up here. I'm very thankful for that. That would have been so brutal to listen to. Like, oh my gosh, we need to get Arroyo up here. It's like, dude, the kid's like 20 years old. Dude, we need to start under. We need to do a class, like 3 times a year on service time, right? Like, let's all think logically about service time. We bring these guys up, their clock starts. We want to try to utilize not that now that we're trying to manipulate it. But I'd like to bring these guys up when they're like 100% ready and they're going to make an impact right away. And boom, we can start the clock then. And we can get all of our money's worth out of them. No offense, but I don't want to bring Arroyo up and him like kind of puts around like, I don't know, Jose Barrero for a few years. And then you got people think he stinks after he comes up.
Yeah, I was just going to bring up Jose Barrero. I don't think you can put all the blame on why Jose Barrero didn't work out on him getting called up at 20 years old in a, you know, emergency spot in 2020, but I don't think it helped his career at all either. So, you know, it's kind of a cautionary tale that you don't want to rush these guys, especially when you're not going to call up Edwin Arroyo and he's going to completely change your team, right? Like that's what, if you're calling up players early, they better be like Ellie De La Cruz and can have an immediate impact on your team. You don't want to be calling up guys that aren't really going to move the needle very much, wasting service time, like you said, wasting an option, like you said, you know, that early in their careers.
Yeah. And then one last thing I want to get ahead of this. I will say it out loud. I'm going to turn into a candy man soon. I'm going to turn into one. I don't know if it's the right thing to do, but it's the one thing that my positive brain wants to try to do. I want to will this man start playing some good baseball. And I think that he will. I think that he will. But he's not so far. And I'm just praying to God that he can find his groove. Because as much as you've talked about we needing Ellie to be the guy, or Ellie being a good player, or Ellie playing to his capable level of play. I would say the same thing about Jamer Candelario, if not more. If not more. Like, this guy is a guy we brought over for a specific reason. Kind of need him. But tonight, didn't need him. That's good.
I was kind of surprised that he got the night off because he had good career numbers against Flexen. So I don't think David Bell puts
who didn't have good career numbers versus Flexen after what I seen tonight.
Well, I don't think that many guys had actually faced him before. I think there was only like four players that had actually faced him. I think he was 3 for 4. I know David Bell doesn't put a lot of stock in those small samples.
Right. Well, there's going to be fist fights at David Bell's office the next time Flexen's coming around to come up.
Yeah.
They're going to all be trying to get in the lineup.
Jamer's watching Santiago Espinal rip balls, and he's like, what the hell, man? Like,
yeah.
This is the night you sit me? This is the night you give me a rest? And tomorrow, we'll talk about a second, is the White Sox best pitcher by a mile. And I'm sure that's what David Bell was thinking. I'm going to, you know, sit Candelario this night because we could use him as a right-handed bat against the better pitcher. But it also is a tough balance where, like, this would have kind of been a nice guy to get the guy going.
It would have been. All right, right before we get to Reds MILB, I got a couple supers here. Jason Brochier says, Abbott seemed to have room to get creative with pitch selection tonight, and it worked, right? I mean, I'll be honest, Jason, I wasn't that locked in. Once the Reds scored 6 runs, I don't say mentally checked out, but I kind of was just relaxing and I wasn't locked in. That could be the case, but I mean, anytime you get runs early, I would say, Nick, Pitchers without question become a little more comfortable. There's going to be a little more sigh of relief per se. You don't feel as if, like, if you walk 2 guys that you're going to get ripped out of the game. And if it's a 0-0 game, there's a chance you get taken out pretty early if that's the case. So I would venture to say that the offense helped out a little bit in that.
Well, and we did just see it with Graham Ashcraft just a couple days ago. I think he was up 8-1 and didn't keep pitching. And Reds ended up having to use their 3 best relievers in that game. So, yeah, like, it's not as easy as, and I know Ashcraft was facing a much better lineup than Abbott was tonight, but you still have to go out and make pitches. So that's important. Did you see the other one? Did you want to read that one?
Yeah. The second one from Jason says, did Abbott give Hunter a lesson on how to get creative with pitch selection, or was it the White Sox? So same type of question. Hunter Greene is going to be a lightning rod for 2 reasons. Reason number 1 is because he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He was highly touted coming up through the system. He was the number 1 pick, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He throws 99 miles an hour. He has a lot of hype coming up into the system. That's why he's going to also be a little bit of a lightning rod. You're going to have some people that are going to try to fight tooth and nail to defend Hunter Greene as long as humanly possible. And then on the other side, you're going to have people that are just like, for whatever dumb reason, they're looking for a reason to root against him. I don't know why you'd be a Reds fan and rooting against him, but I do genuinely think that's the case for some people. The second thing is, and it happens every time in this city for sure, or maybe the other cities are the same as well. I don't want to just blame Cincinnati, but he signed a contract. Now, here's the thing about that contract, Nick, that I want to kind of like, I don't want to say we spent a ton of time here on this, but like, I do think it's relatively important. We haven't talked about this a lot. His average year-over-year contract on that was eight point some odd million, I think. Like, that's the year-over-year average. I'm not saying that's what he gets paid every year, but that's the average over the term. They get 1 year of service time, basically extension out of it, and on top of that, they avoid arbitration. So all in all, I think the average pitcher in Major League Baseball, I looked up this the other day, is $5.5 million. Is just the rough average of what a starting pitcher goes for in Major League Baseball. And let's be honest, $5.5 million per year is not let's be clear. Those aren't like the decent arms. That's just the overall average. Anybody that's worth their weight at all is going to get paid, I don't know, Nick, what's safe to say, 15 plus somewhere in there, Nick, at least?
Nick Martinez is making $16 million.
So there you go. So Nick Martinez making $16 million. And then the Dodgers, I don't have it off the top of my head, but they just signed the overseas, obviously, talent. I don't know his name off the top of my head. I'm not going to butcher it. But the Japanese pitcher, correct? He's making $30 million a year. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Glasnow, I think, is making like $20-plus million a year, or $20-plus million a year, and the guy was just hurt. He's not all that. My point in saying all that is to say that it's not like Hunter Greene got some major, massive contract. Like, he just didn't. Now, if he doesn't throw well at all, guess what? The Reds lost the deal. They lost out on the deal. We get that. But if he throws the ball really, really well, then the Reds win. There's this risk-reward here. You can't play both sides of the coin. And I would just say that the reason for his hate, more times than not, I don't know, comes from just the fact that it's either a person thing, that people are overhyping him up, or they think that he got paid a lot of money and he really didn't. So I just kind of want to throw that out there and say, and listen, Hunter Green, he doesn't even need to be an ace to be successful here. But he's going to have to develop some better. I've rambled on forever here, but I do think he needs to get better, Nick. Like, he's not. He does need to get better.
Holding the contract against him is just, it's not right at all. I mean, if he continues to put up, right now he has a career 4.64 ERA. If he just continues to put up that year after year after year, he's going to end up making as much money as he makes through what his original signed deal was. Like, that's how much these pitchers make. So the contract's just really more of a, it's almost more of a formality. So the Reds kind of have that etched in. They know their budget more than anything. And then they end up getting an extra year or two at the end of that.
The now, only way they really lose if he were to get hurt.
Yes.
Which is why I think he signed it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly right. The only way the Reds could lose this contract is if he gets hurt. That's spot on. One thing on Andrew Abbott, though. Andrew Abbott is older than Hunter Green. I don't think enough people really actually realize that. He's older than him. It kind of reminds me of Johnny Cueto and Mike Leake. Mike Leake came up and was an instant success, but there wasn't really much of like an upward trajectory. Like, that he was there. He was good. He was good for year after year after year. And credit to Mike Leake, he was great. Johnny Cueto had a much higher ceiling, and the guys that have the higher ceiling that are going to strike out more batters, it sometimes takes them a little bit longer to get going. I think that could be exactly what you see here with Andrew Abbott. So I really don't think you should use Andrew Abbott's success against Hunter Green. You can if you want, but I don't think it's fair, because they're two very different types of pitchers. The pitcher that's like Andrew Abbott, I think it's a little easier for them to have the instant success, you know, going all the way through college in the ACC, versus a guy like Hunter Green that had Tommy John surgery. While he was developing, there was the whole COVID thing, which completely threw off a whole year of development for him. So there are two different types of pitchers. Obviously, I want to see Hunter Green. I think his best year is a 4.44 ERA. I like to, if he could get somewhere close to like a four at the end of the year, it's not going to make everyone happy. It's going to make me happy, because that's a positive sign forward. And you just want to see him continue to get better. But I wouldn't hold what Andrew Abbott's doing against him. I don't think that's fair, really, to either pitcher. All right, well, let's get you caught up on all the Reds minor league action. Start off with AAA. The Louisville Bats, they played a doubleheader. They lost game one 5-4 in actually 8 innings. Minor league games that are doubleheaders are actually 7 innings, so the 8th inning is like the 10th inning. But they did win game 2-0. Bats now 6-7 on the year. Some pitching performances, these were all from game one. Lyon Richardson really struggled. He walked 5 batters over 2 innings, giving up 3 runs. Casey Legamina, he was pretty strong over 2 innings, just gave up 1 run. And Tony Santion, he continues to pitch really, really well through a scoreless inning, walked 1 and struck out 2. Blake Dunn did not start either of the games for the Bats. He did leave the game, no word on if he was injured the other day. He did end up pinch running in game 2, so hopefully that is a positive sign for Dunn. Not a lot of good offensive performances on the day. Mike Ford was 0 for 5, did walk twice. Reese Hines, 0 for 4 on the day. He walked once. Connor Capel was just 1 for 6 on the day, but he did make that hit count. He hit a homer, actually already his 5th home run of the season. Tough times down at AA for the Chattanooga Lookouts. They fell 4-1 to Tennessee. Lookouts have started the season 0-5. Jose Torres was 1 for 3. Tyler Callahan, 0 for 4. Matt Nelson, 2 for 4. Austin Hendrick, 0 for 4. But the really big positive from this game, reliever Zach Maxwell, a guy that it really impressed in spring training. Fastball well over 100 miles per hour. He was electric on Friday night. He retired all 5 batters that he faced and struck out 3 of them. All right, down to High A, the Dayton Dragons. They won a thriller on Friday night, and some of the top prospects were right in the middle of it. Dragons trailed 3-2 going into the top of the ninth on the road against Cedar Rapids. Ethan O'Donnell led off with a single, Sal Stewart singled, and then Cam Collier hit a three-run home run to put the Dragons up 5-3, and that would be the final score. Sal Stewart, that was his only hit of the game, 1-for-4 with the walk. Cam Collier, that was his only hit as well, his second home run of the season. Hector Rodriguez had another good day. He was 3-for-5 with a double. Carlos Jorge, 1-for-5 with a triple. But the starting pitcher, the other big story of this game, Rhett Lauder, through five innings, just gave up 4 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, and struck out 5. Lauder reportedly hit 96 miles per hour with his fastball. He's got a nice little 1-even ERA through his first 2 professional starts. All right, last but not least, the Daytona Tortugas. They lost 4-0 to Palm Beach. Tortugas fall to 3-4 on the season. Not a whole lot of good stuff from the Reds' top prospects down there. Carlos Sanchez was 0-for-4. Ricardo Cabrera was 0-for-3. Alfredo Duro was 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts. Esmith Pineda was also 0-for-4. But one guy that did stand out, Dominic Battelli. He was 2-for-3. He stole a base, already got 4 stolen bases. Battelli was the Reds' 2023 seventh-round draft pick out of Miami, Florida. He's off to a great start, hitting .500 with an OPS over .1400 through his first 6 games. All right, well, Reds will be back in action on Saturday. Weird start time on a Saturday. We don't see a whole lot of these in Cincinnati. 2:10 p.m., it'll be on Bally Sports Ohio. For the White Sox, they will have the lefty Garrett Crochet. This is by far the most exciting player right now on the White Sox, especially with Luis Robert on the IL. Crochet was the 11th overall pick for the White Sox back in 2020. When he came up, he was used exclusively as a reliever all the way up until spring training this year. He actually made his MLB debut as a reliever against the Reds at Great American Ballpark on September 18th, 2020. He struck out Brian Goodwin and Jose Barrero before he got Tucker Barnhart to ground out. You might remember that was Reds were making that late season push. That was a big series against the White Sox. The Reds won 10 of their last 12 to get to the playoffs. Crochet, he's been outstanding throughout his big league career. A career 2.71 ERA and 72 relief appearances from 2020 to 2023. He did have Tommy John surgery in 2022, and then the White Sox decided to try him out as a starting pitcher as they're in a full rebuild, kind of, I guess, figuring what do they have to lose. He ended up being named the White Sox opening day starting pitcher. If you might remember, if you're on Twitter, the White Sox, when they announced this, kind of got really ripped apart for it, but it actually ended up working out really well for him because Crochet threw 6 innings of 1-run ball on opening day, didn't walk anyone, and struck out 8. The White Sox, unfortunately, lost the game 1-0. But Crochet, he's been outstanding this year, 1-1, an ERA of 2. Coming into Friday, he was actually second in the American League with 21 strikeouts. So the Reds will have their work cut out for them against a really tough lefty in Garrett Crochet. But for the Reds, it'll be the season debut, the long-awaited season debut of Nick Lodolo. He'll be making his first MLB start since May 6, 2023. And ironically, his last Major League start was actually against the White Sox at Great American Ballpark. He gave up 3 runs over 3 2/3 innings, but clearly Lodolo was not right at that point. Lodolo was outstanding this spring. 4 2/3 innings, only gave up 1 run, struck out 5. Struggled a little bit at AAA, especially in that last start. He ended up going 7 2/3 innings, giving up 5 earned runs. Only walked 3 and struck out 10, but it's hard to really know if you put a whole lot of stock into what he did at AAA. Velocity and everything looked good, though. Only 3 White Sox have ever faced Lodolo. Benintendi's 1-for-2 with a double. Robbie Grossman's 1-for-3. And Andrew Vaughn 0-for-3 with a strikeout. All right, well, thanks so much, as always, for listening today to Chatterbox Reds. If you're not yet subscribed to Chatterbox Reds, wherever you listen to this podcast, make sure you do that now. Also, be sure to subscribe to Chatterbox Sports on YouTube, where we do live post-game shows after every single game. If you could, leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to this podcast. We'd really appreciate that. But even more so, tell a Reds fan about Chatterbox Reds. We would appreciate that. So we hope to continue to grow the show and bring you great content all season long. Well, have a great Saturday. We will see you on Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube around 4:40 or so. Of course, if you missed that, podcast will be up early on Sunday morning. Go Reds.